I was watching the second episode of the new TV series Will last night on TNT, and I watched the pilot and I had some thoughts, and I watched the second episode and I was having even more thoughts that I began to share on Twitter, and I got a response from my friend, the novelist Christopher Moore, who was the author of Fool and The Serpent of Venice and Lamb, another wonderful, funny Shakespearean. And so I thought that rather than continue the conversation on Twitter, Chris and I could just share our thoughts about Will on the podcast. What do you think, Chris? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I really have the jury still out on it, Austin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 553, We Review Will. I've been on a roll recently reading plays about William Shakespeare and his works, specifically Bill Kane's Equivocation and Lauren Gunderson's new play, The Book of Will, which I'll be talking about more on the podcast later in the year. So I was in the perfect frame of mind to start watching the new TV series Will, which premiered its first two episodes last week on the TNT network here in the U.S. I had a bunch of opinions about it, so I turned it to Christopher Moore, the New York Times bestselling novelist whose novel Fool tells the story of King Lear from the fool's point of view, and its sequel The Serpent of Venice, in which Lear's fool, named Pocket of Dog Snugging, travels to Venice and encounters characters from Othello and The Merchant of Venice. Chris and I jumped on Skype to share our first impressions of TV's Will.
There are things I really liked, but I'm not sure that they're not specific to the fact that the writers are rock stars. I'm thinking, how much of I just, you know, is that very specific to someone who does what I do for a living? It's like, yeah, that's how it should be. We should just be, there should just be adulation from the crowds for anybody who writes.
So on that score, I think the fantasy really works.
From my point of view, yes.
And I guess we should explain for the listeners who maybe haven't seen it, the conceit is that, you know, 1590 London is not dissimilar to New York City in the 1980s. Is that
right,
kind of fair?
Right. Or London in the late 1970s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of sex and drugs and rock and roll and iambic pentameter.
Yeah, and very colorful and sort of inconsistent sanitation. Yeah, there's some really clean people with great teeth, and then occasionally they just do a character shot where they've dragged some child through the mud and knocked a few of his teeth out. You know, it's I guess you just have to go, that's part of the theater, and that's something where I would defer to your judgment. You know, because it's again, the idea of for a muse of fire, where you just imagine in a theatrical sense what you're watching, and it feels like they sort of push that conceit quite a bit. But I may be getting too far into the weeds on this.
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think that's part of the fun of I think that's part of the fun and the potential appeal of a show like this, is that it recreates this imaginary world in a way that will appeal to the modern viewer. I guess my problem, the thing I'm liking the least, is that it seems to be playing more to the groundlings than the Shakespeareans, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes complete sense. And I think I commented online that it felt like the product of too many meetings, where somebody said, well, how are we going to reach the CW crowd who likes Arrow and The Flash? And they're like, well, we need to put more pretty people in it. And it is, The main characters are the, what were they called? The Chamberlain's men, Burbage's company.
Yeah.
The main characters are the Chamberlain's men, Will Shakespeare, Christopher Marlowe, and Shakespeare's family. And then, Burbage's daughter, who I think is fictional. Is that a real person?
Alice Burbage. You know, I don't know. I should probably Google that while we're talking.
Yeah. You know, for the benefit of the audience, those are the main characters, and it's set in a world that sort of steps up the battle of Queen Elizabeth against the Catholic Church, and the idea that Shakespeare was a closet Catholic, which is something I've heard before, but it's really part of it's what they use to add intrigue to and danger to the plot. Your point that they speak more to the groundlings than the Shakespeareans, I think that's again, goes to the idea of a television meeting, which I'm sure you've been in, where everything is sort of, oh, it's my turn to talk and I don't really have anything to say, so I'm going to change the entire content of this presentation to make it sound as if I thought something up, which is, you know, why don't we have a Jew in it? Or why don't we have a, you know, that sort of, you know, right. Can you make it happen on a beach?
Right.
And it's that's how it feels to me, Austin, is it just feels like they're searching for their audience and they don't want to lose anybody. And there were different demographics thrown in during a meeting.
Well, and I think that's true of many television shows, particularly in the early episodes, is that they throw a lot of things out there to see what sticks and see what the audience will respond to. And so, yes, Shakespeare is trying to establish himself as a writer, and with Burbage's company, and he's also come to London and to pass on a letter to his cousin, who's a renowned and dangerous Catholic. So then there's all this Catholic Protestant tension, and also Christopher Marlowe is a spy for the government, and also Christopher Marlowe is in love with Shakespeare, and so there's these romantic, not triangles, romantic dodecahedrons going around. And, you know, maybe that'll all settle down, and maybe it won't. To answer your earlier question, yes, James Burbage did have a daughter named Alice. And then there's also that romantic tension, because Shakespeare and Alice have a bit of a crush on each other, but of course Shakespeare's married and has left his wife and children back in Stratford. So there's a lot of different things going on and a lot of balls in the air, and I'm hoping it settles down a little bit.
Well, I'm going to remain open to it, because I'm not going to just dislike it because it doesn't fit. I want it to become what it wants to become. And if I like that, that's fine. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's, you know, initially there are a lot of really good looking people you can look at, which is sometimes a formula for shows, particularly shows that they're trying to get the younger audience to look at. You know, like if you look at the cast of CW shows, it's like the best looking people on the planet just happen to be.
They've been genetically engineered to be on a
CW
show.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter what the situation is. It's a post-apocalyptic dystopian world. They're just gorgeous. And for some reason, Australian.
Right. And with a ton of access to running water and shampoo.
Yeah, but nevertheless, that's an okay thing.
Yeah.
I don't think historical accuracy, which is something that you and I might look for, is necessary.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah. I don't like the shiny, sparkly, dancey bits, but see, I don't like that about this guy's work in the past. As I was watching, I didn't IMDb this as I was watching it, because I didn't want to. I thought as I was watching it, this feels a lot like what's his name, Baz Luhrmann stuff.
Uh-huh.
As it turns out, that writer is the guy who created this series, and there's just this sort of shininess and modern shrugging off of any dark aspect of life in those works like Moulin Rouge. And, you know, it's sort of, we all chuckle at tuberculosis in Moulin Rouge, and we all,
yes, his name is Craig Pierce, and he wrote the screenplay for Moulin Rouge, Romeo plus Juliet, Strictly Ballroom, and The Great Gatsby. Yeah, so he's been working in this world for a while.
And those, and every one of those is a very shiny sort of production, a very, as soon as it starts. And the thing that I, about Will that I found sort of off-putting was, if you're going to make it shiny and sort of light and musical and, you know, anybody could just burst into tap dancing at any moment, go with that. But then they have this B story of this young street urchin and his sister, the prostitute, that's really dark and sort of dire.
Yeah.
That I think that's probably as accurate as anything else, but as a counterpoint to people having rap battles in iambic pentameter, which is something that happens, I just am having a hard time putting it together. But you know,
maybe I disagree with you here, because I'm a big fan of those sorts of tonal shifts. I kind of always do love a thing where the reviews are, this can't decide what it wants to be. And maybe I think that street urchin, that actor, he's being asked to do a lot of things, and I think he's doing them very, very well. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean, where they can't really, it doesn't feel of a tonally all of a piece. The director of the pilot, anyway, Shekhar Kapoor, has also directed the two movies about Queen Elizabeth, Elizabeth and Elizabeth, the Golden Age. So he's worked in this world a little bit before as well.
This is Matt Walker, the artistic director of the Troubadour Theater Company in Los Angeles, and you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? It's a thankfully very quiet July, but in about 2 weeks, starting on August 3rd, you'll be able to see James Percy, Matt Pearson, and Joe Maudsley performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, at the Gilded Balloon in Edinburgh. And this fall, starting in September, you can see us perform all the great books Abridged, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, and the ultimate Christmas show, Abridged, across the U.S. in Culver and South Bend, Indiana, West Long Branch, New Jersey, Aiken, South Carolina, Davis, California, Laramie, Wyoming, Asheville, North Carolina, Maryville, Tennessee, Somerville, New Jersey, San Jose, California, Algona, Iowa, Reston, Virginia, and La Mirada, California. And also this September, you can see us perform the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Revised, in Hong Kong and Singapore. Next winter, we'll also perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, off-Broadway at the New Victory Theater in New York City. And a year from now, we'll return to the Pittsburgh Public Theater to close out their season with our production of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Christopher Moore and our reactions to the new TNT's TV series, Will.
It's funny, so your initial reaction, if I'm hearing it right, was to the writing of the piece, and my strongest reactions are to the acting. Because I like the guy playing Will. I think he's very appealing. And I like Cullum Meaney as James Burbage. And I like the gal playing Alice Burbage. And I like Ewan Bremner, who's a Scottish actor. He was in Trainspotting. He's in the new Wonder Woman. And he almost always plays a low-rent, crazy Scot. And here he's playing the Sir Topcliffe, who's the head of the Queen's mission to root out Catholics. And he's just evil high-class lord. And it's just, it's fun for me to see him playing a different kind of role. But then they have these other performances that I just loathe. I kind of blame the actors, but I blame the director for casting these actors. Should cast better actors. But, like, there's this whole thing where Richard Burbage, the greatest actor of the day, the man who would go on to play Hamlet and Richard III,
right,
and all of Hamlet, Shakespeare's great heroes. Their conceit is that he's a terrible actor. He's young and terrible, which I like as an idea. Unfortunately, I think the actor playing him is also young and terrible.
I was going to agree with that vociferously. I think that they cast that guy and wrote that guy as an archetype for the sort of douchey womanizer frat boy. You know, he is the bro of the cast.
Yes.
And the harmless bro, evidently, because we know he's going to go on to be great friends with Will Shakespeare.
Right. And become, presumably, a better actor it seems like, Shakespeare's tutelage.
Yeah, and he's going to, the greatest parts in history are going to be written for that guy.
Yeah.
So that might be a misfire. And I don't know who, I don't know who the guy who's sort of the Devo of the bunch right now, with the beard. I don't know who that's supposed to be historically, but he's very over the top and very sort of,
The big star, the star, right, that, right, gets wooed over to the rose and then comes back. That's Will Kemp. That's supposedly Will Kemp, Shakespeare's greatest comedian. And yes, historically, he was a very popular actor. He and Richard Burbage were the two most popular actors of their day.
Right.
But Kemp in real life was a comedian, and they've cast this guy who really is not funny or charming or anything.
Right. I think that we're still both saying this thing needs to find its feet.
Yes.
And I have seen enough television where the first few episodes I thought were, if not miserable, bordering on miserable, that went on to be pretty terrific. Parks and Rec and 30 Rock were both that way. They were just like, oh my God, I can't believe these talented people are doing this horrible thing. And then they got their feet, and they suddenly became wonderful once they figured out what they were. I'm not going to bet on this that network will give them enough time to do that. But I agree with you. The performances are good enough that it almost deserves that.
Yeah. Well, that's very Christian of you. Are you a secret Catholic?
No, I just don't take relish in trashing things.
Yeah. Me neither. I agree.
You know, I just don't get anything out of it. It doesn't edify me. If there's something I can learn from looking at a mistake that I think someone's made, you know, then that's fine. But I think that it could get better.
Yeah.
And right now you've got some really talented people putting in performances, and you can't judge anything by the look of it. You know, I don't like the look of it. You like the look out of it. We discussed that. And that's, you know, one of the things my personal axiom is, if you walked out of a movie and say, well, the production design was awesome, that's a bad movie.
Right.
You
know?
If you go, well, it looked great, that's a bad movie, usually. And so I'm not going to judge this, you know, on how it looks. And I agree with you. I think there's some solid performances.
I know in what we do, you know, there's a period called previews.
Right.
Where you're working out the script, you're working out the performances, you're working out tone. And that's very often what happens, as you were saying, in the early episodes of a TV show. So I'm with you. I've still got my fingers crossed. The second episode was trying my patience a lot. But I'm prepared to keep watching and see how they go.
Yeah, a great example of this, because something that sort of gets talked about a lot, is Game of Thrones in the first season had invented something they called sexposition, where anytime anybody was having sex, they would be talking about their genealogy charts. and it was really a thing. And the producers acknowledged, we can't do that anymore. My wife wouldn't watch it. She's like, this is clearly written by someone who's never had sex. And I'm like, no, honey, maybe everyone else talks about genealogy when they're doing it. and we're the freaks. But so that's a really prime example that everybody can use as a touchstone for something that got fixed as a show got its feet under it. And maybe that could happen with this. I mean, you've got to love the idea of Shakespeare as a main character, you know, as Stopper did in Shakespeare in Love. I mean, that's a brilliant piece.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can catch Will on TNT on Monday nights this summer. The third episode airs tonight, in fact. Or catch up with past episodes at TNT's website, tntdrama.com. Send us your reviews of Will via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also send us your thoughts about Will via Facebook or Twitter. And you can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @AustinTichner. And the RSC is now on Instagram, too, @ReducedShakespeareCompany. You can also follow Christopher Moore on Twitter @TheAuthorGuy and find out more about his terrific comic novels at his website, chrismoore.com. Thanks, as always, to more of a Will Kemp than a Robert Armin Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Melinda Rose Scalance. I hope I said that right. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Matt Walker, artistic director of the Troubadour Theatre Company, another group that does a funny, irreverent Shakespeare. Check out what they do at truby.com. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1659ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
So I guess our ultimate judgment on Will is two thumbs sideways.
Yeah, we're still on the bubble.
It's weird to think, oh, that Shakespeare kid, we're going to have to see how this turns out.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.